You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we literally get to the bottom of why people use words like, so, and what's up? Oh, and literally, and dude. Plus, why people get so annoyed by those words. Our guest says it's all a positive sign of the flexibility of spoken English. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about gardening.
Gardening season is upon us. For people blessed with a green thumb, this is their moment to shine. They're sowing the seeds now to reap the rewards later. For others, the idea of planting a garden bed is daunting, especially if you have a bad track record of keeping plants alive. But as Mark Griffin tells us, there is hope, even for the most unskilled gardeners.
For most of my adult life, one general principle allowed me to sow the seeds of doubt in my own head about the prospects of raising a child. If I am unable to keep a plant in my charge alive for a reasonable amount of time, should I really be trusted with a more complex organism? Well, then I had one, and I learned to love in a new way. Still, a haunted past with plants is tough to shake. It started with the silver inch plant my freshman year of college. It turns out you do have to water them. Then, I accidentally killed my life partner's favorite ficus by leaving it outside overnight in sub-freezing temps. Plants don't like that. More recently, I've treated other houseplants to spider mites and scale. So, when we inherited raised beds in our new backyard, it wasn't carelessness or lack of urgency that led to the perfectly supple dirt going fallow for almost 3 years. I simply did not want to let another innocent piece of greenery die by my hands. So last spring, as my daughter neared the ripe old age of 4, I sought redemption. If not for my sake, then for hers. Data can learn new things too, right? So I sent away for sunflower seeds, and when they arrived, I placed them in the bowl of stuff in the kitchen. Then they sat there. And sat. Towards the end of June, I had a notion. How about we plant these things? On a warm Saturday morning, the intrepid child and I dug out a raised bed to bury some seeds in the ground. Then I looked at my girl and imagined our future. People would come from all over to take Instagram photos of our backyard amongst rows and rows of giant sunflowers, holding their babies up, posing with their wedding parties, complete with honeybee photo bombs. We would become the pride of the neighborhood, and I would be redeemed. Weeks went by, and the weeds thrived. But then, I saw 3 shoots appear. 3! Just days later, in one fell swoop, a rabbit took out 2 of them, allowing but a single sunflower to remain. I wrapped wire around the remaining stalk, dug stakes, and anchored it with 3 large boulders. Then, miraculously, the sunflower unfolded to reveal a perfect circle of seeds surrounded by deep yellow petals, waving at us from across the yard. I pointed it out to the kiddo, who was amused, but approached the whole thing with a different, confident attitude. Of course the flower bloomed. Then, as summer waned, the sunflower slowly lost its vigor. The petals dreadlocked, while the stem, as tall as the child who planted it, just sort of, kind of, started leaning over. It was time. In one unceremonious hack, I decapitated my summer creation, then let it sit out on our porch where it was pillaged by the neighborhood squirrel. In full mockery, it did leave a single seed that I then placed in the kitchen bowl with the other household jetsam. Until the first rays of spring appeared again. This year, I think I'll take a different tack. Maybe it's time for this dad to look a little closer through the eyes of his daughter, whose breezy focus on the positive comes more naturally than her predecessor. This year, she'll be in charge of the garden, cultivating stronger yields to be reaped in the brisk winds of next season's harvest. No photos allowed.
Mark Griffin is a writer who lives in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum. Sunflower,
good morning. Now, the words we use and how we use them say a lot about who we are, where we come from, and our place in that community. The people who nerd out studying all of that, they're called sociolinguists, and our guest is one of them. She's particularly interested in words that people use that other people might see as incorrect or ungrammatical or lazy. Think words like or or ain't. Where do you fall on words like that? Love them? Hate them? Our guest says there's no wrong way to use English, and there's a lot of history to explain where these words and feelings come from. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find yourself using words like this? You know, they're grammatically not quite right, but it just fits. Is it different depending on who you're talking to? How do people respond to it? Are you annoyed by what you see as the misuse of language? Or are you annoyed by people who correct this kind of language? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Valerie Friedland is a professor of linguistics in the English department at the University of Nevada, Reno. She writes a popular language blog on Psychology Today called Language in the Wild and is a professor for the Great Courses series. Her new book is called Like Literally, Dude, Arguing for the Good in Bad English. Valerie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and talk with you.
Well, I could have gone with another greeting like this one.
What's up? What's up? Yo, who's that?
Yo!
So, Val, you write about that old classic "Was up beer ad," and that's an example of how we might use unusual or not quite to the rule book English language to connect with other people.
Absolutely. When we talk to each other, we're really about connection rather than grammatical correctness. And I think that sometimes we forget this when we overhear people and find what they say annoying.
Can you talk about the difference between English as a careful system of rules that we observe or not observe at our peril and language English as we actually use it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of times what we do is we live in these ideas of what good language is and what bad language is based on essentially a social construction that has been around for only about 200 years, this idea of prescriptive grammar, of rules that you should follow. And I'm not saying that language has no rules. Language has a million rules, but they're cognitive and articulatory rules that guide us in understanding what people say and constructing sentences that other people will understand. But a rule like don't end a sentence with a preposition or two negatives make a positive are actually essentially made up rules in the 18th century by people that wanted English to be more like Latin. So those are social rules about what we think is proper and polite language. Those really have very little to do with the rules that underlie the system of language. And it's really more about what we think is good for making connections, for showing our social identity, for letting people understand both information about what we're trying to get across, the point or the information itself, but also ideas about how we feel about that information, how we feel about the relationship we have with that speaker, and things about our social identity, like our gender and our ethnicity. And those are really important parts of the reasons we communicate.
Now, let's get into some of the bad, I'll always throw that in quotes, English you talk about here. Going back to the 90s again, actually, the 1995 comedy Clueless demonstrates a lot of this. The main character, Cher, arguing in a high school debate class in favor of oppressed people being allowed refuge in America.
So, okay, like right now, for example, the Haitians need to come to America. But some people are all, what about the strain on our resources? But it's like when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? I said RSVP because it was a sit-down dinner. But people came that, like, did not RSVP. So I was, like, totally bugging.
All right, you tackle a lot of these words. Some of them have their own chapter in your book. Let's start with like. It appears like a meaningless word. I just said it there. I'm going to keep catching myself saying it. We often judge people who say like too much. But hold on, you write, like is actually doing something in our sentences, Valerie.
Absolutely. It's doing a lot. And one of the reasons I think we don't like it, now it's, we're going to notice every like we say, is because it does so many different things and we're not all on the same page about what it's doing. So all of us know like as a verb and even a noun, like your dislikes and your likes. We often use it as a preposition, like in a simile. And a lot of us have even crept into using it as a conjunction with things like it feels like, it seems like, he pretends like. And all of those likes are pretty well accepted. They don't bug us so much. But what does bug us is the new forms of like. And part of that is because of who is using them, which is often young speakers, often female speakers, two groups that we tend to disdain how they talk. But it's also because we don't maybe understand all the functions so that it feels like it's just omnipresent when really it's doing different things. And you can use like, for example, as an approximator where about would go. So he's like 12. There's no difference between saying he's like 12 and he's about 12, except for the age of the user. It's still doing that same work that the about is doing as an approximator. And you can use it as a discourse particle to express emphasis. So something like, I was waiting like 20 hours for you, where obviously it's not really 20 hours, but I'm just telling you, hey, I'm pretty annoyed with you because you were late. And so it's emphatic and hyperbolic in that sense. And we convey a lot of emotionality that way with hyperbolic statements. So it's functioning as something that we would do in a different way. So you might instead use like there instead of saying, you know, I'm really annoyed with you because you took so long. And it's much cooler, hipper way to say it. And then finally, use it as a quotative verb where you're talking not only about what someone said, but even more subtly, what they might be thinking as an event was unfolding, which is not really something you can do with the verb to say very well. So here, like adds a nuance of meaning that to say doesn't. So if I said something such as, I was like, I just can't do this. What that's telling my listener is that's not necessarily something I verbatim said. It's what I was thinking in the moment that the event I'm describing was happening, which is different than I said, if I've said, and I said, I just can't do this, which would convey an actual verbatim quote. So there it's actually adding a really useful nuance of meaning. I think our objection with like is that sometimes it feels like people overuse it. And that's very different. Because someone might overuse it in a context doesn't mean the word itself is meaningless. It just means maybe that person is using it a little excessively.
We're talking to Valerie Friedland, professor of linguistics in the English department in the University of Nevada, Reno. Her new book is called Like Literally, Dude, Arguing for the Good in Bad English. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about how the language changes? Do you have a generation gap in your family where maybe kids or grandkids use words or phrases that are more or less unintelligible to you or annoyingly incorrect as you hear it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Valerie Friedland, linguistics professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. Her new book is called Like Literally, Dude, Arguing for the Good in Bad English. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to our callers. Richard is with us in Manitowoc. Richard, hi.
Hi. It's been driving me crazy. I listen to NPR all day long, and I notice a lot of times they answer questions with an answer, but they put a little inflection on the end of the answer, like it's a question. And I just drive me nuts lately, and I didn't know why they're doing this so often more than I've ever heard before.
Richard, thanks for the call. Valerie, I think it's this thing called uptalk.
Yes, definitely called uptalk. But if you're a linguist, we call it a high rising terminal just to be fancy. Ooh. And make it sound impressive. And what's really interesting is intonation patterns often vary by speaker. They vary by language and they might vary by dialect. But when one intonation pattern gets associated very much with some sort of pragmatic information, like signaling that this is going to be a question, then people get really tied to that one meaning associated with that intonational pattern. And that's what's happened with this high rising terminal. We hear it often when we are finishing a question. And so because of that use in one context, we have then generalized that to other contexts so that when people use high rising terminals to indicate continuation, meaning they're going to keep talking, they're not finished with what they're going to say, which is where we find it used in this way that the caller was talking about. Mm-hmm. Those that are really used to it being a question intonation pattern find it really difficult to see it as something different. But for those that use it, which is often women, there have been certainly studies that show women use more uptalk than men. It seems to indicate that they're not done talking yet. And if you look at the history of women's and women's speech, we find that women tend to be interrupted at a much higher rate than men do, which seems to suggest that people don't read their cues of continuing what they're going to say or feel that it's okay to interrupt them. And so what we find is women have often adopted some speech habits that help encourage the keeping of their turn or proper turn alignment between speakers. And high rising terminal seems to be one of those where if we do a test, which we have done with perception tests, and we have high rising terminals and we ask people what it means, it usually means either a question or in the middle of a sentence, when they're sort of continuing on, it means generally a non-finality. So people seem to read it as that person's continuing what they're going to say and I shouldn't break in. And I think that's really why it's become more prevalent in speech today.
Richard, thanks a lot for that call. And Valerie, a couple things you said remind me of this paradox in your book. Young women speakers, I think, are most commonly made fun of anyone for things they may do differently. But if you want to study the future of a language, look toward young women because they're the ones who develop the things that end up coming into place in the future. What's going on?
Absolutely. A lot of our linguistic disdain is targeted towards women and young women in particular. And it's partially because young women are the innovators in language. Even when we look several centuries back at letters and diaries from the early modern period, new changes coming into the language, like starting to say does and has instead of doth and hath, starting to say you for subjects instead of ye and things like that, starting to use progressive forms of verbs to indicate habitual or continuous action. All of these things were brought into the language through women's speech. We see much higher rates of these novel features in early modern letters and diaries in women's language. And then fast forward to modern times, again, things like using literally, non-literally, using like as an intensifier, these forms that we don't really love, using going to instead of will, those are all led by young women. So we have this pattern where young women lead in language change. We also have this pattern where historically young women's voices are not welcome in public forums, and we tend to disdain their voices themselves. And so you put that in a mix, in a blender, and what you come up with is dislike for young women's voices because they're doing new things that we're not used to, that we consider rule breaking. And there are also voices that we don't tend to love in those contexts anyway. And so doing something new and novel when you're already a disfavored group tends to get you in trouble. And that's pretty much what we find with young women's features today.
Talking to Valerie Friedland, her new book is Like Literally Dude, Arguing for the Good in Bad English. Back to your calls now. Marshall is with us in Price County. Marshall, hi.
Hey, how are you? I'm wondering why people always say, I mean, when they're in.
Oh, Marshall, you're breaking up a little bit, but that's starting the conversation or the sentence with, I mean, blah, blah, or people, and I do this sometimes, so blah, 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 blah. Why do we set up our new topics that way, Valerie?
You know, it's funny. I mean, and so are two of the things I hear about the most when people talk about things that annoy them, in addition to the ones in the book. And both of those are in a category that we call discourse markers, which are words that often come at the beginning of a sentence that serve to do something to the organization or structure of what you're saying, where they either relate it back to what was previously said, or in the cases of those in particular, they are trying to orient the listener to a particular stance or opinion that the speaker has. So usually when you say so at the beginning of a sentence, it follows something that requires additional explanation before you get to the point that directly addresses the thing that was before. It's called the backstory so. So when someone, and I just put it there, so when someone says so at the beginning of a statement, it usually means that I'm going to take a little diversion from the direct answer to what you said so that I can explain some other additional component of meaning here that's going to be relevant to what I'm going to say to answer your question. And then I mean usually clarifies something that was previously said, often something a speaker said themselves, and then they'll say something and say, I mean, I didn't really think that, where they're doing a little extra clarification and they're sort of signaling to the listener that this clarification is about to take place. So they're both listenership devices. They're helping with the conversational structure. And we find when we look at research on who uses those kinds of markers more often, discourse markers, it tends to be people that rank high on conscientious scales on psychological tests. So it's actually to help with conversational flow. Sometimes people use them excessively and we start to notice them. But if we look at studies on people that compared passages with discourse markers and those without. People feel the discourse markers help with the flow and make it less robotic than when they're absent.
Thanks for that call. We heard from Lisa and Madison, who couldn't stay on the line, wondering why some people pronounce the T in some words like a D, like little versus little. And I was thinking, Valerie, reading your book about T's, like the sentence, do you want some butter on your toast? If I say, do you want some butter on your toast? Those are two very different sentences. They mean something different about me. With just a minute left, the meaning of how those how we pronounce those letters.
Well, T is very handy because it does provide a big shortcut to speaker identity. So if you say, you want some butter, then that tells me I'm a Cockney speaker, right? It tells you something about where I come from. If I say, you want some butter, that identifies you as an American speaker because it's called a flap. That T that's pronounced like a D between a stressed and unstressed syllable is something that only developed in the United States after most of the colonists had settled here. So British speakers either glottalize, so ba-a, or they pronounce the T, butta. But an American says butter.
Thanks for that question. And Valerie, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Valerie Friedland is a professor of linguistics in the English department at the University of Nevada, Reno. Her new book is called Like Literally, Dude, Arguing for the Good in Bad English. Do you want some butter on your toast? That sounds sinister to me. Like, I'd see that character in a movie. I don't think I like that character. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, a good apology can go a long way, but a bad one can make a situation even worse. We'll get some great advice on how to make amends with the author of the book, Sorry, Sorry, Sorry. And movies that are based on books are sometimes better than the original, than their inspiration. We'll get some recommendations on great book-to-movie adaptations and hear some of your favorites. You can email your favorite book-to-movie adaptation right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we get ready to hit the road. With the summer travel season fast approaching, we'll hear about your most memorable road trips. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, some health insurance companies are rejecting more and more claims. A health journalist tells us what's behind that trend and what to do when your health insurance claim is rejected. Now, are you planning to hit the road this summer? We want to know where you're heading. Road trips, big and small, are a big American tradition, and with Memorial Day weekend just around the corner, we're inviting you to share your plans or your memories or your annual road trip plans with your family or friends or on your own. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. What is the best summer road trip you've ever taken? Do you have a favorite road trip memory you'd like to share with us? Do you have plans for something maybe this weekend or over the summer here in Wisconsin or beyond? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Getting some family or friends together, getting behind the wheel can be a great experience that results in some of our most interesting stories and fondest memories, whether it's a few weeks, a few days, or just a few hours. Tell us about your favorite road experience. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We asked around WPR here, heard from some of our colleagues. Evan Casey, a Milwaukee-based reporter, says, my dad, Tom, passed away late last year, but one of our favorite activities to do every summer was to take a road trip together. 2 years ago, we drove to North Carolina to spend time with some family. On the way, we stopped in Louisville to tour the Louisville Slugger Museum and to go see a AAA baseball game. We also stopped at a Waffle House on a random exit somewhere in Kentucky, a lifelong dream of my dad's at that point. Evan says the food was not great, much to his chagrin. And Evan says during the drive, we listened to the Highwaymen and Johnny Cash, but I also made him listen to my favorite podcasts. This year, Evan plans to take a solo road trip to Cooperstown, New York to see the National Baseball Hall of Fame, trip he would have made with his dad this year. How about you? You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your road trip plans, 800-642-1234. Oh, good. Looks like we have a little hiccup in our phone system. So please be patient or keep trying. I see some of you have had to come and go lately. You could join in now. I think we're getting that straightened out. 800-642-1234 is the number. We want to hear about your road trips, past or present. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Also here at WPR, Emily Ralph, a radio operations manager here at WPR, says, I grew up in Florida, and much of my dad's family is in the Rhinelander area. Every summer and most winters, we would make the two-day drive, my dad, my sister, and me. Emily says, I still get nostalgic for those times. I remember in the Tennessee or Kentucky area, there was some strawberry soda. That was amazing. I haven't had it in decades, but I still think of it. Do you have a memory like that from your childhood, maybe a family road trip you did every year? Something that you do with your family now, maybe something you replicate, or if you've got plans in the works. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. All right, I think we're making contact with callers now. That's good news. We call these caller onlys. We hope to be able to talk to callers. Now, when I first moved to Wisconsin, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have a job. Well, I had a job lined up, hadn't started it yet, hadn't started classes yet. Nothing to do but road trips. I'd looked at these places that sounded cool on the map. My first full day in the state, this is a place called Natural Bridge State Park. Well, sounds pretty cool. I had the road atlas, drove over, toured around Natural Bridge State Park. It is pretty cool. I've been back there since. And then on the way back, I saw signs for the state championship cow chip throw contest in Sauk City, Prairie du Sac, the big park there. All right. When in Wisconsin, I stopped there, and it was really impressive. I saw the state record broken at the time, and the winner, of course, was headed to the national championships in Beaver, Oklahoma. So it was not a big road trip, just the course of a day, but it was a good one. All right, now we're getting some calls, and we're talking to our callers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Mark starts us off in Bloomer. So thanks for sticking it out there, Mark. What do you want to tell us about?
So two things. This summer, my son's going to earn his bicycle merit badge for Scouts, so we're going to be biking all summer. And number two, I turned 50 this year, so we're going to Cedar Point Roller Coaster Park in Ohio. Enjoy your life and your youth while you got it. It goes back.
Yeah, I went to Cedar Point as a kid coming down there from Michigan. Where is the biking going to happen, Mark?
All over Wisconsin and Minnesota, all kinds of different trails.
All right. Well, happy birthday and congrats on your kid's badge there. Thanks a lot for starting us off at 800-642-1234. Kate joins us now in Glendale. Kate, hello.
Hi. We're going in July. My husband and I are taking a trip that we've been trying to do for 3 years now. We're going to take an Amtrak out to Seattle.
Ooh.
We'll have a bedroom on the train. And then we're going to take from there. We're going up to Alaska, and we're taking the Inside Passage ferry.
Wow!
And we'll have a cabin on that, and that'll take. We're going to be gone for a total of 3 weeks.
Wow! Have you taken a long train trip like that before, Kate, or is this your first big one that you've been working up to?
Well, I did go when I was very young. I took a long train trip to California to visit my uncle. However, this is really the first long trip since then. And we just wanted to do it in, you know, a way that would be very relaxing. And it'll get us there in a couple of days. And then the Inside Passage Ferry, I did take that in 1982 when I visited a friend who lived in Ketchikan. But this is a time we're going to go from Bellingham, Washington, all the way up to Haines and stay there for 6 days because that's how long it'll take the boat to get back.
Fantastic, Kate. Well, happy travels. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We are asking for your favorite road trip memories or the road trip you have, and you can define it however you want. It's a one-day car tour or a multi-week train and boat tour. You name it. Love to hear your stories and plans at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Ben is with us now on his way to Ironwood, Michigan. Ben, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about? What's your trip?
Last summer, I drove on my way to Charleston, South Carolina. I stopped in Charleston, West Virginia, which was my 50th state. So I road tripped them all.
Wow. Okay. Is this something you set out to do? Or did you realize, wow, I've been to most of the states already. I might as well just round up?
I was taught growing up, we were the minivan family. We drove to Florida to visit my grandma every winter break and drove to Colorado to visit my aunt to go skiing every spring break.
Wow. And now, do you do these trips solo now, or is there family or friends involved on this South Carolina via West Virginia trip?
We travel as a pack. It's my wife and our husky.
Excellent. Oh, that's wonderful. And did you see now you got the Monongahela Forest there in West Virginia? Did you see some of the good sights?
It was a bit of a pass-through. I did go to the Capitol, which is, being from Madison, stopping at state capitals is always really fun. So that's another part of the things that I do. And my wife and I started getting into going to see the gardens. And another really cool one that I'd tell anybody to do is we did Niagara Falls in Toronto and then went to Montreal. We went to the East Coast and went sailing in Maine and drove all the way back home. So
Fantastic.
The car is really our home.
Awesome. Ben, thanks for sharing that. 50 states plus a couple provinces along the way. We are taking your calls with your favorite road trip memories or your road trip plans for this year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Judith Heise, our WPR digital marketing manager, shared this with us. She says, as a child of a long-haul truck driver, road trips mean eating at the truck stops that your dad already knows he likes and stopping at the places your dad has driven by but wants to check out further. Also means most of the road time is during the night or wee hours of the morning between dad's usual sleep times. It also means you really got to mean it if you have to go to the bathroom. I remember, Judith says, my mom telling my dad while we were hammering down the interstate, they're just little children, they need to stop. But he was not a tyrant and nothing but good memories of Mount Rushmore and Flintstone Land and the Grand Tetons, Yellowstone National Park, and a grasshopper plague in Denver that meant the hotel pool was clogged with bugs. It also means, Judith says, when I helped a friend move to Seattle, my dad told us which of the Flying J truck stops were not to be missed. Now you could share your stories, your favorite road trip memories, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Here's some more of your stories and some more from here at WPR coming up on Central Time.
I've been over there, hey, smelled that dairy air, hey, once up by Eau Claire, hey, thought I saw a bear, hey, I had a creep up at State Fair, hey, I've been over there. I've been to Edgerton, Darlington, Middleton, Hubbleton, Hub City, Cuba City, Genoa City, Ashburn, Ashland, Packwalk.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We want to know where you have been or where you're going. We're taking your calls about the best road trips you've ever taken, your favorite road trip memories, your plans for hitting the road this summer, your favorite places to go in Wisconsin or the rest of the world. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite childhood memory of a family road trip, an annual trip you took with your family, or maybe one you do every year now, or maybe a brand new thing you're planning for this very summer? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Go back to your calls now. Jackie is with us in Milwaukee. Jackie, what's your story?
My family and I, mom, dad, my sister, my brother, and I, we would drive either the pickup truck or the station wagon, pull in the trailer, and we'd go to Florida every winter. We'd do the Everglades and all the little road trips, the little side displays they would have. But another thing I wanted to comment on was that I've read so much how the younger people don't drive as often because of the cost. And
oh, I think we lost you there, Jack. I think we lost you there, Jackie. Yeah, but we got your story. Thanks. Sounds like great memories of those childhood road trips. It reminds me of Lee Rayburn, a producer for Central Time, says years before the first National Lampoon's Vacation movie, my dad decided to pack wife, two kids, niece, mother, elderly aunt, all into a brand new station wagon to make the trek to Disney World again. Didn't get very far before the seven of us realized the air conditioner didn't work. The back of the station wagon had a fold-out seat facing the rear window that rolled down, so my sister, my cousin, and I stayed cool by breathing in the car exhaust. Lee says not long after that, the engine overheated, ended up stranded at the mercy of the nearest auto mechanic. Like Wally World in the movie, Disney World was open by the time we finally arrived. Back to your calls now. Jordan is with us in Anago. Jordan, hi.
Hi there.
What's your road trip you want to tell us about?
So I would love to shamelessly plug my former employer, Saildor County, out of Sister Bay, Wisconsin. Ooh. They offer absolutely beautiful two-hour scenic sailing cruises. Their pride and joy is a 67-foot wooden sailboat that sailed around the world twice. The drive up through Door County is beautiful, you know, winding roads up through the bluffs and down by the shore, and then getting to spend 2 hours on the deck of a gorgeous boat looking out over the water is just priceless.
Now, you said your former employer, so do you used to actually sail these boats?
That is correct. I was the deckhand on the schooner Edith M. Becker.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. That sounds like a lot of great views there, I bet. Thanks for sharing that with us, Jordan. We'll go to Steve in Milwaukee now. Steve, what trip did you want to tell us about?
Well, I think it has to be my 1948 road trip with my parents in a brand new 1948 Chevrolet four-door.
Where'd you go?
We took Highway 18, the main road at the time, all the way out to the Dakotas. We visited Rushmore, Yellowstone. In fact, I'm looking at a window sticker from Reptile Gardens in Rapid City, South Dakota, as we speak.
Fantastic. And was it a comfortable trip, Steve? Plenty of places to stop for a food and gas?
Interesting. We would stop every night, of course, and at that time, the motels had separate little cabins.
Oh, yeah.
And we would stop at a place. My mother would go in and check out the cabin to see if it was clean enough. And if it was good, we took it. And if it wasn't, we went down the road.
Steve, thank you so much for sharing that. Wow, that sounds like a great epic road trip. I love it. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Gordon joins us now in Eagle River. Gordon, hi.
Hello there.
Hi, where do you like to go?
Well, actually, we're new to Eagle River. We've camped here for years. But when we get a week off or more, then we'd go to the UP and camp at campgrounds along the Lake Superior shore in Michigan. And
what time of year do you usually go there, Gordon?
Oh, usually after Labor Day.
Okay. And that's when Lake Superior is as warm as it's going to get. Do you spend time in the water?
Not very much.
See, I used to go up in August and get in there. And the secret is it's not so painful once your extremities go numb. And then you could spend like hours in the water.
I can't believe the way people swim and enjoy it the way they do. So,
Gordon, and are you going to head up there this year?
I think we got a few days scheduled. Yeah, we have a travel trailer we haul along and get away from things and enjoy the Lake Superior shore. It's an inland sea, so we enjoy the sunsets. And when I get to see the freighters out on the water, I enjoy that too. So
fantastic. I'm feeling jealous. I don't have a trip planned up there, and it's been a while. Gordon, thank you so much for sharing that. We got an email from Trent in Appleton who says, for many years, his family's been traveling from the Fox Valley area up to Hayward, Wisconsin, for the Lumberjack World Championships. Over the years, they developed friendships with some of the competitors and others that make the same trek every year. He says it inspired his son to start log rolling, and he's taking that up as a sport. And, oh, this is awesome. And he competes as an amateur at the World Championships and other competitions throughout the state. That's cool. I mean, we got to get in touch and talk about that, the log rollers of the future. Back to your calls now. David is with us in Green Bay. David, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your story, David?
So we would go to South Dakota an awful lot because my parents, my dad's parents lived out there. And so there'd be a couple of days driving like every summer a couple of times. And dad used to strap in a TV between the front two seats so that my sister and I could watch in the back. And our favorite movie to watch on the trip was Babe, like that kids movie about that pig. And we loved Babe because we thought it was a magic movie, because we thought it changed every time we watched it. So we never knew which plot, like what would happen on that trip. It wasn't until years and years later when I realized we thought it would change because we'd just fall asleep on the road trip at different times. So we'd always wake up to a different part of the Babe movie. And so we had no idea what happened the whole time.
That's fantastic. And I'm trying to picture this. This is like with a little TV with a VHS player in it or what?
Yeah, exactly. He would bungee cord it between his chair and mom's chair in the front, like right under the armrest. Sometimes you'd have to take the armrests off to fit it in. But yeah, we just, it was great. Those are some of my best memories.
That is fantastic. Thanks so much for sharing that with us, David. I love the and probably they dreamed, right? They completed the movie in their dreams in different ways. And there were different twists and permutations. I love it. Still time for you to call in with your road trip story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our own Susanna Michaels from the WPR fundraising team says, I don't love driving. In fact, I actively don't like it. But twice, Susanna says, I've driven to my family in Connecticut. Each time I stopped at a beautiful campground in Pennsylvania called Promised Land State Park. Doing that by myself, getting up to swim in the lake in the morning made me feel like I was really living life and made me feel competent. Awesome, Susanna. Thanks for that. We got an email from Andy who says his favorite road trip was his first big one. In 1996, he and his future wife took a 1994 Honda two-door hatchback loaded with camping gear and food out to Yellowstone and back in 1 week. He said every day was a new adventure and just the start of a lifetime of traveling with his wife and kids. I love everybody seems to remember exactly the car they had on these road trips. This is fantastic. We heard from Chris Deering, WPR business sponsorship manager, says in 1996, my girlfriend's older brother relocated from Ohio to San Diego, asked us if we wanted to drive their beloved Toyota pickup truck out for them. We jumped at the chance. Neither of us had been out west, so we drove for 20 hours straight. So we got to the Front Range in Colorado. And I've done that and spent the next 2 weeks making our way through some of the most amazing landscapes imaginable. And the list includes here, let's see, Red Rocks, Garden of the Gods, Mesa Verde, Arches National Park, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Sedona, Arizona all stand out. Favorite memory, sleeping under about a million stars in Taos, New Mexico. We thought we were seeing what was actually the Milky Way galaxy. Oh, they saw that. Mind-blowing to a city kid that was used to seeing the Big Dipper and a few other stars on a good night. Wow. A lot of inspiring road trip stories. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. Still time for you to call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Kim is with us now in Germantown. Kim, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What kind of road trips do you do?
Well, I've done quite a few road trips to get to something called the PGI convention. It's the pyrotechnic, I don't even know what all it stands for, but it's...
Sounds like fireworks to me.
Make fireworks. Yeah, they make fireworks, they sell fireworks, they do the displays. They have an annual conference every year where they are the most spectacular fireworks you will ever see in your life.
So hang on, Kim. This is where, if I'm a fireworks artist, this is where I go and I'm trying to impress all the other fireworks artists?
Yes, exactly. These are people that make them every year. They show new fireworks that they invented that year. And I have gone all over to see these. They're so spectacular. I did them 1 year to Pennsylvania. I've done them to Iowa a few years. And 1 year we went up to Wyoming, my girlfriend and I. So we did the whole Yellowstone and all the sites along the way. And that one was actually funny because we drove all the way out there. And when we got there, it was too windy, and
oh,
they couldn't even display them all. Oh, and one time I went to Michigan to see them, and there was a huge lightning storm the night before, which took out many of the fireworks because they're set up for the whole week and they blow them all off.
But oh, wow.
To your listeners, it is in Wisconsin this year.
Whereabouts?
I think it's in Oshkosh. It's either in Oshkosh or Appleton. But they are the most phenomenal fireworks you will ever see in your life because you're exactly right. It's people in that industry trying to impress each other.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that call. Thanks to everybody who called in and shared road trip experiences, and your plans are hitting the road again this summer. Happy travels if you've got a trip in the works. Coming up, a former doctor turned journalist tells us why health insurance claims are being rejected at a higher rate. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.